Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Made by History. I'm here with myself, Mark, and Matt. Here's Matt. Introduce
Hi
yourself.
guys, it's Matt here. We're back with another content-filled episode. Today, we're delving more into the present topic about Alexander Navalny. We'll get into who he is in a minute, but yeah, this is more recent than some of our other historical episodes. I'm very excited to talk about this because it is a topic, a point that's happening right now in history that I don't think people understand how like crucial or how momentous it could be.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, do you want to dive straight into telling us who Navalny is, what sort of what the movement is that he's leading in Russia, just like an overall, like what's going on? Tell the people what's happening, man.
Most certainly. So Alexander Navalny is the way that he's described, or his official job title that he would have, is called a Kremlin critic. That is what he is known as across Russia and Europe. So the Kremlin, being Russia's institution of government, being their governing body, led by Vladimir Putin, they're very authoritarian. They don't like when you disagree with them, or especially want to change how they do things. As we know, Putin's been president for quite a long time, an extreme amount of time. One might say too long.
Well, yeah, maybe a little bit, yeah.
But, however, you really can't, even if you think that, you really can't say that if you live in Russia. There's no criticizing the Kremlin. They do things how they want to do things. Alexander Navalny doesn't really like this. I wouldn't call him a revolutionary, but he represents, I think, a growing number of people in Russia who just aren't satisfied with the Kremlin anymore and who want to move things. And so if you want like a little timeline over some of his events,
Yes, yeah.
on August 20th, 2020, Alexander Navalny, he was hospitalized in Omsk, or I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. OMSK, Omsk. It's a Siberian city, northeast Russia. He fell ill and lost consciousness on a flight. And originally, the autopsy, which was run by none other than the Kremlin, said he just had a heart palpitation, nothing serious. He's fine. It was later found out by Tomsk Boshageva, a Russian scientist, that he was poisoned. There were traces of poison in the teacup that he was drinking from, his bloodstream, and his vital organs. This drew a lot of speculation from different people around the world, but they all seemed to come to the same conclusion, it being the Kremlin and Putin, as this was right after he delivered a rousing speech about how bad Putin was and how he didn't like the Kremlin. He was then airlifted to the Charité Hospital in Berlin for treatment, and there was a Russian medical team, a German medical team, and a Moldovan medical team.
Interesting
It's
little
an interesting combination and some
guest star appearance from Moldova.
a not so often representation from the poorest country in the European Union. But so the German and the Moldovan doctors indicated that his tests that he was poisoned in eight vital organs, which I think is all of the vital organs, but I'm not a scientist.
That's eight more than you would like normally.
Yes, precisely. And then, as I said, the Russian team just so coincidentally found that it was heart palpitations, but then after reading these reports, they realized they had missed something. So then fast forward 10 or so days later, September 2nd, the German officials find unequivocal proof that Navalny was poisoned with a Novichok nerve agent, which is a Soviet-era chemical weapon. I didn't know those were still in use. I didn't know the Russian government was using those on people. I thought we had moved on from the Soviet era. I guess not. And then Angela Merkel releases an official statement saying Navalny is a victim of attempted murder, adding there are serious questions that only the Russian government can and must answer. International calls for an investigation into the incident start to gain momentum. The next day, the Kremlin rejects these claims, including those made by Navalny's team, that Moscow was behind the poisoning. And then the next day after that, a Russian toxicologist, which is a specific doctor that specializes in poisonings and like finding out the point of poisoning and the, what it does, and says Navalny's health could be permanently deteriorated because of this poison, and that he will not be able to keep the same diet, stress levels, or fatigue. Then 3 days later, on September 7th, German doctors say that Navalny's gone into an artificial coma to do more studies on his body. But then the next day, he's found missing. He was put in this artificial coma, and now he's missing.
From the hospital in Germany?
From the hospital in Germany.
Oh, boy. Okay. I didn't know this. This is crazy. Yeah, okay. Wow.
4 days later, he's seen walking in the Siberian city of Omsk, where he is speaking to a crowd of people about the elections coming up in Russia and how not to vote for Putin, even though he's your... Russia live in a democracy, but Putin is your candidate.
Yeah. 99% of that vote goes to Putin all the time.
From the pre-picked list of candidates.
Yeah. And it's totally legit, too.
No corruption whatsoever.
No.
So then September 14th, a few days later, laboratories in France, Sweden confirmed Germany's findings that Navalny was poisoned with Novichok. And then Emmanuel Macron, who is the French president, urges Putin to shed light on the attempted murder, but the Russian leader only moves to condemn whatever unidentified party seems to have poisoned Navalny.
Oh man, who could have done it?
So then we move into September. There's a lot from Navalny. He's posting messages on Instagram and Twitter saying he's able to breathe unaided, appearing with his wife Yulia and his two children, whose names I'm not going to try to pronounce. Okay. And he's chilling. He's looking nice. He's still going. Then if we fast forward to around December 21st, Navalny releases a recording of his own self appearing to trick an FSB agent into confessing that he tried to kill him by putting poison in his underpants. The FSB denounces the video clip of the phone call, calling it as fake. And then a week later, 3 days after Christmas, Russia's prison service gives Navalny a last-minute ultimatum, telling him to fly back from Germany at once and report at a Moscow office, or that he'll be jailed. Now, any thoughts on what's happened so far, the story of Navalny this year?
There's a lot. One question for you is, do we know how Navalny got out of the hospital? Or no? He just made it in Omsk. On his own will, somehow.
He was put in an artificial coma, and then it was believed that he was resuscitated due to the endangerment of his own safety, that he was not safe, and that he was moved. We fast forward to January 12th, 2021. Court documents reveal a Russian judge has been asked to jail Navalny in absentia for, among other infractions, having allegedly broken the terms of a suspended sentence he had been serving. He was never in prison before this, so this was total bullcrap.
Yeah, and wasn't he in a coma for this sentence that he was supposed to serve or whatever?
Yes, this was during his poisoned, not alive hours, or maybe alive hours.
How convenient.
How convenient for the Kremlin. January 13th, 2021, Navalny posts a video on Instagram announcing plans to return home to Russia. And he says, there's a direct quote, "It was never a question of whether to return or not, simply because I never left. I ended up in Germany after arriving in an intensive care unit for one reason. They tried to kill me." 4 days later, he flies home. He's detained shortly after landing at Moscow's Sheremetyevo Airport. The arrest provokes condemnation from several European and world powers and a chorus of calls for his immediate release. The next day, a Russian judge remands Navalny in pretrial detention for 30 days for violating the terms of his suspended jail sentence, which, shocker, he wasn't awake for. He wasn't technically alive for. So it doesn't really make sense. Navalny urges Russians to take to the streets in protest in the wake of the decision. He says, don't be afraid, take to the streets. Don't go out for me, go out for yourself and your future. Then, as we see, this is a quick little bit of context. There are 13 time zones in Russia. Russia spans 13 time zones. There were people in 12 out of the 13 time zones protesting his arrest in temperatures down to below 60 Fahrenheit, like negative 60. And it's heartwarming in the sense to see that the Russian people are not happy or are now being vocally unhappy with Putin and especially this action. But there's just so much work to be done.
Right, yeah. And I think, if I may, something that's kind of interesting with Russia in comparison to Western countries or even the U.S., we have a lot of work to do, you know, whether it be racial injustice or, you know, climate change or a number of other issues, right? But we have like a foundation of democracy, and Russia's never really had that. They've gone from monarchy to dictatorship to dictatorship. So it's been there's going to be a real struggle for them to make their way towards whatever democratic institutions they can build. That is, if they're able to, you know, make an impact in their protests against Putin's government. So question for you, do you have any good old, we like to compare on this show. I don't know if you've noticed from the format of the previous episodes, dear listeners.
Correlation. It's very common.
Do you have any comparison points here, historical or current, for this protest movement, Navalny's actions, etc.?
Well, I mean, if you're looking in terms of people who, quote unquote, betray the U.S. government, or not even, or and when I say betray, for those listening on Spotify or Anchor, I'm doing air quotes here, betray the U.S. government, and they go into exile. They either go into exile or get killed. One person who I can think of off the top of my head is Edward Snowden.
Yep.
Do we all know who he is? He was an American whistleblower who leaked highly classified information from the NSA in 2013 when he was a CIA employee and subcontractor. What he released, like, it revealed a bunch of stuff that the U.S. is doing a lot of monitoring and a lot of spying that was illegal internationally, and a lot of telecommunications and money deals with different European, not even governments, but like subcontractors. Mm-hmm. And so basically he was going to be tried for treason, even though what he was doing was calling out that something wasn't right. So then what happened was Snowden defected. He left the U.S. He, my bad. I'm sorry. I keep.
No worries.
But he defected, and coincidentally, he settled in Russia.
Yeah.
Now,
doesn't he live across from the FSB building or something like that?
Yeah, it's very, 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 very odd.
Yeah.
But so if he were to have gone back, like Navalny was, the U.S. does treason a little bit differently than Russia. He probably would have been killed if he wasn't sent to Guantanamo Bay. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Russia's a little more, yeah, who knows? CIA is a little more prickly than other government organizations, and so is the NSA. So maybe, I don't know if it would be as public, though. Like, I don't know if it would be, like, Snowden poisoned or, like, Snowden shot by CIA. It would be like, you know, he disappeared. But I think he'd probably end up in Guantanamo Bay, especially now that he's got so much public recognition. you know.
Yeah.
Snowden, we might have to do something about Snowden at some point. Not the CIA. I mean, we might have to make an episode about Snowden at some point.
If the CIA is listening to this podcast, we are not trying to bring Snowden back to the States nor aid him.
No.
He's just going to be a topic of further discussion.
Yeah. Nor are we trying to tie up your loose ends, CIA.
You guys got your own job. We've got ours.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the historical comparisons. I mean, the last time the Russian government did a major shift would be post-Soviet Union.
Yeah.
1991, you look at, where Boris Yeltsin did a bunch of stuff, which, I mean, I could go on for a good half hour about, like, that three-month time period in 1990 where Boris Yeltsin did a lot of stuff. But basically, the Russian Republic of the Soviet Union became the Russian Federation. And that was the last time where they changed from absolute dictatorship to, like, a watered-down dictatorship.
Yeah.
And then before that, you have to look all the way back to 1917, 1918, the Bolshevik Revolution, mm-hmm. where you came into this absolute dictatorship from a monarchy, a tsardom, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Like you said, Russia's never had a real foundation of democracy. And there's definitely been a lot of issues, it's going to be hard to go in with a new government and for things to get actual better. There's a lot of work to be done. And that does bring me to another point I had, which Navalny is definitely also, let's not act like he's a perfect person. He is most certainly the lesser of two evils between him and Putin. And, like, undoubtedly the lesser one, like,
yeah.
Significantly worse, but he has also had his issues, the skeletons in his closet, but it's certainly easier to back him after what he's going through right now.
Right. Yeah. So, do you want to talk a little bit about some of those things that are kind of in Navalny's past?
Sure. Okay. So, Alexei Navalny. This is a disputed clip. It's disputed by him. It's disputed by the Ukrainian government, the Russian government. But there's a phone call of him talking to President Zelensky, who, for people who don't know, is a high-up official in Ukraine. I don't believe he's the president anymore, but I could be wrong.
I don't know.
He was at the time of this phone call, which took place 8 or 9 years ago, and where Navalny did allegedly referred to Muslims and the ethnic sub-minorities in Russia, like Uzbeks, Kazakhs, Tajiks, as roaches, and that he wanted to completely shut down the Russian borders.
Wasn't he talking about Georgians specifically? And that was, what year did he make was he talking about this?
I believe this was 2013.
Okay, so that's not too long after. I mean, you know, so 2008, Russia fights in South Ossetia, which is, mm-hmm. well, we're going to say it's part of, it's in the Caucasus, kind of in Georgia, but, you know, it's like independent or whatever. We can get into the nitty gritty at some other point, but.
We don't want to offend anyone in Eastern Europe.
Yeah. So that was kind of like the climate at the time. That was probably pretty popular, right?
Yeah.
In Russia.
Hating
that kind of anti-Muslim, anti-Georgian sentiment.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely not. Definitely weren't pro-Caucasus countries at the time.
Yeah.
But so he has his own things that he's not great at. I would say, and this is not me excusing any racism or Islamophobia,
mm-hmm.
definitely better than Putin. And this is my personal opinion. I'm not. If you want to be pro-Putin, that is totally your choice. It is in my personal view, he is the lesser of two evils than Putin, and certainly a beacon of hope that shines toward democratic elections. And
yeah.
Of your leaders,
for sure. I'd say Putin I mean, yeah, who knows? I don't know how, like, the nature of the dispute over whether he, you know, what he said or what he said specifically. But I mean, I would definitely prefer, if I were, you know, an informed member of the Russian public, I would prefer Alexei Navalny over Putin, just for his, I mean, Putin and his oligarchs have gutted the country since they took power. So, any more thoughts and reflections on that topic? I don't mean to cut you off.
Putin also has said some very anti-Muslim, anti-non-white Russian sentiments. He has quotes like that, like from early in his presidency, talking about specifically the Uzbeks in 2002. We shall fight them, throw them in prisons, and destroy them.
Great quote. Really, really great.
Really resembles Putin as a whole.
Yeah.
He has. It's a bad situation, but it was good to see the Russian people protesting in mass, in poor conditions, in freezing weather, to support like a shift towards a more democratic democracy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I mean, in Eastern Europe, there's been a lot of, there's been a lot of news, but there's been kind of like a lot of stagnation over time. Like the U.S. continues to grow, despite its problems, continues to grow. China continues to grow. And then Russia, who we kind of, you know, think of as like a, you know, one of the three big ones, the three world powers. I mean, you know, not just geographic size. It's falling behind. I mean, population is much smaller than both the U.S. and China. And, you know, like the just standard of living is way lower than at least in the U.S. Alcoholism is very common. And they, you know, there's a number of wars that they're dealing with at the moment. Interventions / wars.
Organizations, like stuff that they put themselves into, Ukraine. Well, I mean, I guess Crimea is technically over, but Crimea, Ukraine, the Caucasus.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've occupied Ukraine, or not Ukraine, sorry. Crimea. Crimea is part of Russia now. They said that I don't think they're officially fighting in Ukraine, but there are Russian troops that have been fighting the Ukrainian army in Ukraine. So
there's just no declaration.
Yeah. Yeah.
And declarations don't always mean war. Like the U.S., as you guys probably know, have participated in countless or funded countless wars across their history, but have only released 5 declarations of war.
Yeah. I mean, declarations do mean war, but
but
interventions and stuff like that, there's a messy gray area.
I think I phrased that poorly. No declaration doesn't mean no war.
Yeah. There we go. Yep. Definitely. Yeah. So personally for you, Matt, what do you think is the likelihood that, Navalny is able to, he's going to serve that sentence, right?
He's serving. Well, he's not serving the sentence already. Like, he's not in any special kind of holding spot. He is in jail.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I would think it would be very, very surprising if he didn't serve the sentence or even serve the full sentence.
What I mean is, do you think how likely is it you think he survives that, knowing that the Russian government can definitely poison him or kill him or do whatever they want to him in prison? And then after that, how likely do you think it is that he, you know, makes it out and is able to rally enough support to make some major changes.
Well, again, for the listeners at home, there's going to be air quotes used here, but there's a very there's a decent chance that he commits suicide.
Yeah, there's the air quotes.
While serving the 30-day sentence, if he does manage to make it through alive in good contentions, I just really would be surprised if he did, because the Russian government is going to want that. They're not going to want him walking free, especially if they try to kill him or do something to him and it doesn't work. Hey, that's just adding more fuel to his fire. And if I think if he does end up getting released, he does get out of Russian prison. Again, my personal opinion is that it's very unlikely that he will. I don't know about major changes, but he will definitely have a lot of support. Definitely more so than he has now. Definitely a possibility that he could do something.
Interesting. Yeah. I think just from what I've heard, and read, Navalny, just like the moves that he's made have been very strategic. He's exposed a lot of corruption in the government. Going back to Russia after being poisoned and like publicly just, you know, making that appearance, like, I'm not afraid. And then, you know, going to court, and I'm pretty sure he like swore at the judge and he called Putin a, you know, underwear poisoner or something like that. So like just kind of just that example alone, I think it would be a really bad idea for the Russian government to kill him. And he also said explicitly, he said, if I go to prison, I'm not killing myself. So, you know, I think that was definitely the signal to his followers. They killed me. If I commit suicide, that's in air quotes. If I commit suicide in prison, they killed me. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm hopeful. I would love to see a Russia that's more democratic than it is. But who knows how likely that is. Yeah, that would be really cool. So, closing thoughts.
Well, just to add on to what you were saying, if you don't mind, it's just Navalny. It's a very tricky situation. Like, because he clearly he said he's not going to exile anywhere. So it's the Russian government does have to make a choice, and it's just the question of, will he really get enough support? Like the last time the Russian overgovernment was, the Russian Tsardom was overthrown was 1917. And you had overwhelming amounts of support during a wartime crisis where the country was running out of food already. It would just be really surprising to me if he was able to muster up enough support, the Russians were able to muster up enough support to make serious changes in the government. Because keep in mind, where in the US, this is also debatable, this is my opinion. Mm-hmm. Well, there might not be absolute equality and freedom without abolishing the current state of government. In America and a lot of Western countries, you can better people's lives and make changes using the system we already have, using legislature, using different government acts. Mm-hmm. You're not making any major or serious beneficial changes to your life in Russia through the Kremlin or through the Russian government. So yeah, the only way that you're really benefiting your life is abolishing it or like making serious changes, not through the Kremlin, but to the Kremlin. And for that to happen in a time where Russia is, like, yes, they're on the downtrend, but it's like the last time this happened, they were in World War I. To muster up enough support and manpower and just force in general to make these changes during a time when Russia, be it on the downtrend, is not like crazily unstable,
yeah,
would be very surprising to myself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know that there will be like a civil war or anything like that anytime soon. Especially because there's a lot of people that have been, you know, coerced or are just kind of like forced to, you know, be in agreement with Putin's government. But, you know, we'll see. Well, it remains to be seen how the story unfolds, but we'll keep you posted everybody listening at home. So thank you, Matt. Thank you for informing us and informing me. I learned a lot today about Navalny, his situation, what's going on in Russia. I know I'm liking talking about Russia. I'm doing some reading of my own. So maybe expect some more Russia episodes sometime soon. No promises, but
promises. Yeah. I mean, we'll do as much as the CIA will let us.
Yes, we're actually directly beholden to the CIA. I winked for everybody listening with your ears, and yeah. So yeah, we hope you enjoyed. And looking forward to our next episode.
Yeah, if anyone knows how to use Spotify podcast comments or Anchor comments or anything like that, feel free to send in requests for episodes that you want to listen to. I mean, pretty much anything history related, I would love to do research on. Or I mean, I would do research anyway, but I might already have a plethora of knowledge that we could. Mark may have too. Mark's a big whiz in the brain area. some major. I mean, we could cover pretty much anything. It just depends on how much research it requires and how neat it is. But we could do something on pretty much anything. Spotify comments, Anchor comments. If you know us personally, contact us personally.
Please do. Please do.
It would be fantastic to know that someone with a heartbeat that is not our parents is listening to this podcast.
and shameless promotion here, but it's for the podcast, so it's okay. Follow Made by History Pod on Instagram for updates, little inside scoops on what's going on, and just to DM us what you want us to make. We have not that many listeners. We're not very famous, so please hit us up.
Well, I wouldn't be that hard. We do have listeners from over 30 countries across the world.
That's true. I'm selling us short here.
Yes. Regardless, contribute. This is a growing community of history lovers. If you specifically have a plethora of knowledge or want to talk about something, as long as you're not like a wacko, we would love to talk to you on the
podcast. Yeah. For sure.
And be it COVID, you can do anything virtually, so anyone from anywhere.
Yeah. On that note, we'll be seeing you in the next episode. I've been Mark.
I've been Matt. I still am Matt, but anyways.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm also still Mark. And you're listening to Made by History. See you on the next one. Goodbye.
See ya.